Frank Gore retired this month after 16 NFL seasons, his first 10 coming with the 49ers. Gore entered the NFL after an injury-plagued college career. He ended up becoming one of the most durable and dependable running backs of his era. The man responsible for selecting Gore in the 2005 draft, former 49ers general manager Scott McLuhan, relives that decision and reflects on what allowed Gore to thrive in all facets of the game. One of the most popular players to ever wear a 49ers uniform, Gore retired as the number 3 all-time leading rusher in NFL history. McLuhan also shares his thoughts on the 49ers' 2022 draft class and how he would handle the team's quarterback situation this summer with Jimmy Garoppolo and Trey Lance. Jennifer Lee Chan and I check our Twitter mailbag to answer some questions along the way. All that and more coming up right now on 49ers Talk.
Welcome to another edition of 49ers Talk on NBCSportsBayArea.com. Introducing your host, Matt Maiocco.
I'm Matt Maiocco. She's Jennifer Lee Chan. And this is 49ers Talk brought to you by Big O Tires. And I don't know that it was a bucket list item, Jennifer, but I crossed a major, major landmark off my checklist because, can you believe, I'm a California native. I've been to many national parks, maybe 6 or 8. Mm-hmm. I'd never been to Yosemite until this last weekend, Father's Day weekend.
I actually have not been either. And I've, yes.
Yeah, but
I know.
You're not a native of California.
True,
you're,
but I've lived here longer than I've lived anywhere else at this point.
Yeah, so you grew up in Washington State. Mm-hmm.
That is correct.
And so at least you had that going for you. Have you been to the Olympia National Forest?
I have.
Okay, there you go. Well, you've been to your closest national park. Mm-hmm. And so finally went to Yosemite National Park, and I have 49ers Talk to credit for that.
Wow. Do tell this story.
Yeah. So several months ago, I'd say maybe even many months ago, I'd mentioned on here that I'd never been to Yosemite. Mm-hmm. And I think Laura was kind of giving me grief about that. And then shortly thereafter, I received a note from somebody, a loyal listener of 49ers Talk, who said, I have a winery in Mariposa. We're right outside of Yosemite. Love to have you and your family come. And I ran it by the family and they're all like, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. But then I didn't want to push it. Right. So I just kind of like, you know, I'm not going to go back and go, hey, you know, what about that offer? And so probably about 2 months ago, Jason Smith at Castro Oaks in Mariposa reached back out to me and said, okay, if you still want to come, let's talk about some dates.
Oh, wow.
And I said, okay, here are the dates. And we did it. And we had a phenomenal time.
That is very cool.
Yeah. Great hikes, great scenery. The wine was great too. Yeah. Company
well, that,
was great.
That helps.
Yeah, it definitely helped. Yeah. So fantastic time going to Yosemite. And now we're back in the grind of things. And we got, by the way, special guest coming up on 49ers Talk, Scott McLuhan. Ever since Frank Gore signed his contract with the team and then retired as a member of the team, I've been like, oh, you know what? I need to get Scott McLuhan on because really Frank Gore would not be with the 49ers. He would not have been with the 49ers if it weren't for Scott McLuhan kind of taking a leap of faith and really falling for Frank Gore, the football player, the person. Mm-hmm. And they took him in the third round of the 2005 draft. And so Frank Gore destined at some point for the Hall of Fame. And so we talked to Scott McLuhan about Frank Gore and his journey, as well as the current 49ers. So that's coming up a little bit later. In the meantime, I also asked for some questions, and I did, I don't know if you saw this. Well, I tagged you, of course, but I said, ask us anything. Can't guarantee we'll answer anything, but ask us anything. And so we did get some really good questions, but I kind of like this first one, because it really is an ask anything kind of question. Mm-hmm. And this comes from G.R. Wooten. Did Jennifer Lee Chan make it to Henley for the Henley Royal Regatta back in her rowing days? And then as a parenthetical, controversial fact, Dan Snyder has a connection with the town. And so what some people might not know about you, you revealed recently that you have a background as a professional wrestler. What less people know about you is that you went to the University of Southern California for rowing, correct?
Well, I went there and was on the rowing team, but it was previous or prior to them offering scholarships for those positions. So I actually went to USC on an academic scholarship.
But oh, then, look at you.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
I was a total nerd in high school. All I did was study and do activities. So I had an academic scholarship to USC, joined the rowing team because in Washington, rowing is huge, right? There's Puget Sound, like you go to the Seahawks game, Lake Washington's there. There's water everywhere. So everybody rows up in Washington State on the west side, Puget Sound area. So I had a little experience doing that. I ended up being the coxswain for the women's rowing team at USC. And
that's the person with the megaphone that yells?
That is correct. Well, actually, it's a little bit more high tech than that. And you've got a little mic and there's speakers okay. throughout the boat. So I don't have to yell 8 people deep.
Yeah, I think I'm thinking of like those rowing movies, like where the 1920s Olympics or something, and the person has the little megaphone.
Right, right.
Yeah, so it's a little bit more high tech.
Exactly. So I was on the rowing team there and we didn't actually make it to the Henley. I rowed up and down the coast, Washington, Oregon, Northern California, Pacific Coast Championships were at Lake Natoma near Sacramento, San Diego Crew Classic in San Diego. So mostly on the West Coast. But that was always a goal to race internationally and we didn't do it. But
and Henley, the Henley Royal Regatta is in the UK, correct?
It is. It is. Okay. And the connection to Dan Snyder is that he actually, in his formative years, went to school there for 2 years while his family lived there. So he was there for, I think, somewhere in junior high or right prior to junior high. So around 6th, 7th grade, something there.
I say the less we talk about Dan Snyder, the better on 49ers Talk. So let's move on, moving along.
Well, I can return it. So the rowing team at USC was a varsity sport. So we worked out in the same facility as the USC football players. So my connection to football not only was with my grandfather and my father, who were huge 49ers fans and had season tickets and kind of taught me to love football, but then I got to know the football players at USC, lived in the same dorms as some of them, and that made my connection to football even closer, followed all of them that I knew going to the NFL, and then just became an even bigger fan.
Wow. And wasn't Tim Ryan one of those football players you knew back in the day?
Yes. Yes. A little older than me, but yes. And Tim Ryan.
Wow. Just going straight in for the age shaming of Tim Ryan, the 49ers analyst on the radio.
Tim Ryan had a mullet at that time. And
he has a mullet again.
No, he has a ponytail now. Doesn't he have a ponytail? Anyways, he had a mullet back then and he would wear a mesh half shirt to work out. And he had also a giant what some people call a porn stash, but he had a giant bushy mustache, a mesh half shirt and a mullet. It was quite a sight.
I think we really need to dial this back a little bit. Let's go into like some football stuff and we got non-football stuff too, but this one is Scriptum 3. This person says, at least to me, it feels like there's a log jam at certain position groups, specifically linebacker. Could there be a surprising move such as trading Dre Greenlaw or Azeez Alshire upcoming? And that's one I've thought about quite a bit. And I was actually thinking that there would be a decent chance that something could happen around the draft, because they have 3 starting linebackers, right? 3 starting caliber linebackers. And, you know, they're going to keep Fred Warner for the long haul. We know that. They signed him to the long-term contract extension. But Dre Greenlaw and Azeez Alshire are basically coming up now where they can only keep one of them. And it might even be difficult to pay, you know, even pay one of them. I don't know. Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, it would be surprising, yes, but would it shock me? No, but I think that ship has sailed, because I would have thought that they would have wanted to do that if they're going to do that, to do it in this draft, but maybe not. So both those guys are entering the final years of their contracts, and you know, in today's NFL, only 2 linebackers play all downs. And so those money downs on third down, one of those guys is leaving the field, Greenlaw or Alshire. So
right.
I would say it's a certainty that not both of those guys will be back in 2023. And it might be difficult to even keep one of those, depending on what the market holds for both of those gentlemen. So would it shock me? No, I don't think it would.
I understand where you're coming from, but then I also think back to last year where they dealt with so many injuries at the linebacker position, right? So Dre Greenlaw was in and out. He had the groin injury. Obviously, he should be better this season and be healthier and be back to his normal self, but there are so many injuries. Aziz had an injury as well. So, I mean, both those guys, if they can stay healthy, yes, but if it, you know, knock on wood that they stay healthy through the season. But if it turns out to be anywhere close to what it was like last year, where their injuries just depleted that position, wise to keep them.
Yeah. I would say that the reason why you wouldn't even think about trading either one of those players is what you just touched on, right? Mm-hmm. With the 17 game season,
right?
There's going to be attrition. And so, you know, theoretically, if Greenlaw gets injured, like he did a lot of last season, mm-hmm. You know, basically that injury week one, and he's knocked out for at least half the year, you know, then you can, you don't lose much at all by going to Al-Shire. Same thing. If the 49ers lose Al-Shire for a period of weeks, they don't lose anything with Greenlaw. But if you traded one of those guys away, then there kind of goes your safety net. So
right.
I certainly wouldn't expect it, but I would understand it if it mm-hmm. came to that. Carlos Zarur ask, do you see the team making any significant trades in parentheses outside of Jimmy G to fill a position in need? I'd say no. I don't think there really is a position of need other than center, but I don't know that they'd be able to trade for a center. Mm-hmm. If a team had a center, you know, had this unbelievable surplus of centers that they were stockpiling, you know, to trade, you know, potentially, but I don't think that's the case. So no, I think the team you see now with the 49ers is basically the team you're going to have. And I don't think they need much at all as far as positions of need, other than, you know, that one position I just noted. So my thought would be there will be no trades unless it's the 49ers sending someone somewhere else, not them receiving somebody.
Yeah. It doesn't seem likely at this point. I mean, really, most significant trades would have been done already prior to the draft, because that's what you're trading for, right? You're trading for draft capital that helps you out for the season. And you look at where the team is, the one position that they needed to upgrade was the secondary. And they did that with Traverius Ward. They did it through the draft. So right now, I mean, I would think, and it sounds like John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan are pretty satisfied with where the roster is at this point.
We promised a non-sports question, so here it is. Rory Robarge asks, is GIF, is it pronounced with a hard G or a J sound? So in other words, is GIF, is it pronounced GIF or JIF? And I have the answer to this. Would you like to, though, give it a shot there, Jennifer?
Well, I've heard that the creator of it wanted it to be pronounced GIF. I am a GIF sayer, but also meme. So there
you're
we go.
You're a GIF denier.
I am, but I like the peanut butter.
Oh, okay. A little bit too creamy for me, but yeah. But here's my thought. Yes, you're right. I did a little bit of research. Steve Wilhite, he invented this. Mm-hmm. He created, it's called a GIF, or GIF is short for graphics interchange format. So I know that Will Hite, when he was presented with his Lifetime Achievement Award at the 2013 Webbies, he put up there that it's pronounced GIF. But if the first word is graphics, graphics, mm-hmm. it's got to be GIF. Spokane Niner 25 asked this question, and this is a great question. Earlier in the offseason, John Lynch said that the 49ers had been spinning in the top 10 in the past 4 or 5 years, so they needed to dial it back this offseason. So Spokane Niner 25 says, how can we legitimately consider ourselves a contender when we admitted we cut back on spending? It just doesn't make sense. Now that's dramatic, right?
It is. But did they really cut back on spending? Because they're continuing to spend. They just didn't have a lot of left over to spend more, right? The salary cap went down last year. It did go up this year. They've got a lot of salary already on their
right.
ledger.
Committed to the future.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So,
and also, they're going to be spending for Deebo Samuel this year and probably Nick Bosa next year.
Yes.
One quick note on Nick Bosa. Joey, his brother, did not sign his mega deal until after his fourth season with the Chargers. And so Bosa, Nick, is entering his fourth season with the 49ers. So I would expect that big contract will be happening next offseason. But still, you got the Deebo Samuel deal that's coming up right here. Here's a fun fact that I did not know, but I just looked this up. The Rams were actually near the bottom of the league in spending, in actual cash spending last offseason. Or not last offseason, just last season period, the 2021 season. This year, the Rams are at the very top of the list right now. And so even in 2019, when the 49ers went to the Super Bowl, the 49ers had the most cash spending as any team in the league. And you know who had the lowest? The Kansas City Chiefs, the team that beat the 49ers in the Super Bowl. Wow. So basically, if you're spending over the cap, if your cash spending is more than the salary cap and it continues to be that way, that means at some point that credit card spending, the bill's going to come due and you're going to have to make some slash and burn stuff to your roster. So I totally understand the question. But the fact of the matter is that the teams that continue to spend higher than the salary cap, those are teams that at some point will have to swallow hard because it's going to come due. And the Rams have structured their contracts in a lot of ways that it's going to come due for them. They keep pushing it out there. Yeah, but I mean, you can't argue with their results because they got the Lombardi Trophy and no other team did. So it's not as dire as it sounds or the way that question was posed, because the 49ers have been spending a lot of money. And all you have to do is look at it and go, with Trent Williams, highest paid left tackle, George Kittle, highest paid tight end. You know, Deebo Samuel will be one of the highest paid wide receivers.
Fred Warner,
one of the highest paid linebackers. Kyle Juszczyk, the highest paid fullback.
And Jimmy Garoppolo's contract is not small either.
No, it's not. It's not at all. So anyway, that's where that stands. And we got some great questions. We got so many great questions that because we had a guest in Scott McLuhan, we're probably going to hold some of those questions, more of the football questions, for our next podcast. But when we return after this word from Big O Tires, we're going to talk to Scott McLuhan about Frank Gore and a lot more.
Big O Tires proudly sells its own brand of Big O brand tires. Now through July 10, save $100 instantly on select sets of four Big O brand tires with paid installation. Plus, save an additional $50 when using your Big O credit card. See your locally owned Big O Tire store for offer details.
All right, we are back on 49ers Talk, and it is my pleasure to bring in the former 49ers general manager, the man who is... ultimately, he's responsible, singularly responsible for bringing Frank Gore to the 49ers organization. It's Scott McLuhan. Scott, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor.
Hey, Scott, I just think back, you know, Frank Gore, when you drafted him, and now to look at him all these years later, he signs a one-day contract basically with the 49ers on June 2nd, announces his retirement. First off, this guy always loved football so much and had such a passion for it. I can't believe he actually retired.
Well, it makes two of us. We've had, you know, we talk on a regular basis and have since I drafted, of course, since I've left. And there was always times when he would bounce around with the Jets or whatever, going to different teams. And, you know, I knew he was gonna, and I knew he wanted to, and I knew teams wanted him. I didn't have the heart to tell him he's going the wrong direction from the standpoint of his talent. I could never bring up the retirement word to him because I respected him too much. I know he didn't want to hear it from me. So I know he respects my opinion. And so I couldn't do it. And then all of a sudden one day we were talking, he brought it up and I'm like, wow. I said, well, you know, congratulations getting to that point. You know, of course, congratulations on your career. Awesome. Beyond awesome. Then next thing he says, well, I'm going to start boxing. And I'm like, oh goodness. I said, you can't, he's just so competitive. He has to be involved so badly. And which is one of the reasons why he's so unique as a football player and as a person. But yeah, it was, I was hoping, because, you know, the last thing you want to see for anybody, and especially with Frank, is just to get hurt late in his career or something where it affects him going forward for the rest of his life. And, you know, thank goodness that didn't happen. You know, and, but yeah, it was, because I just couldn't have the heart, because I wanted to talk to him about it, but I just couldn't do it. You know, I seemed like a little bit of my son, you know, but I just couldn't bring up the R word to him. Couldn't do it.
And I mean, what's interesting is, I mean, he just ended, you know, the last season he played was 2020. It sounds like he had opportunities last year to play for some team, but to end it with like 16,000 yards exactly is just kind of, I mean, it just seems really cool. Cause I remember there were times, I remember specifically preseason game, I'm on the sideline at Candlestick Park getting ready to, you know, go down on the field after the game. It's a preseason game. And he comes over to me on the sideline and he says, hey, do you think if I get 10,000 yards rushing, I can, you know, I have a chance of the Hall of Fame. And I said, yeah, I think you do. Well, he not only got 10,000 yards, he gets 6,000 yards more. And the amazing thing, Scott, is that this was a guy that when he came into the league, I mean, you drafted him at the top of the third round, and the biggest knock on him was that he couldn't stay healthy.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And the thing about it wasn't just nick and knack little things. It was major surgeries, you know, for a position he plays, a skill position where a lot of it involves shoulders, knees, you know, to be 100%, a lot of cutting, a lot of hitting. And everybody knows the average year, 3 years for a running back, whatever, boom, boom, boom. You know, the one thing nice about, he came out early. He had a lot of touches in college. And you know, the only reason, because I remember speaking to him the night before the draft, and he said teams called him and said, listen, we're thinking late one, you know, we're thinking two or whatever. And he asked me, and I said, honestly, Frank, I said, I can't touch you until the third because you're medical. You know, the percentages are against you to fulfill your first contract and get a second contract. I said, but I promise you this, if you're there, we have the first pick in the third, I'll take you. He kind of chuckled. He said, I'm not going to be there. I said, well, you know, congratulations if you're not. But if you are, I'm very excited to bring you in here. Very excited. And, of course, it happened. And, you know, for him to play as long as he did, and it's unique because it doesn't matter how tough you are or how much God-given talents you have, injuries are injuries. And we've seen many, many really good talented players that love football like Frank do that don't last because of the medical. And it's a crying shame, but it's part of the business. But for him to prove that was interesting. And I remember the one thing he told me when I first saw him face-to-face after we picked him, he said, I promise you, Scott, I'm not going to embarrass you. I will fulfill this draft class, meaning they'll all retire or be cut before I retire. Everybody drafted in front of me. So I promise you that. And I said, well, Frank, if that's great if that happens. I said, just give me your best. And if it's 3 years, if it's 6 years, that's all we need. You know, but for him to play as long as he did, it, you know, and for him to reach his goal, and his main goal was to outplay the rest of those guys in the draft class. And the last one that was standing was the Sproles, you know, and he wasn't really just a back, but he was kind of a gadget return type guy. But once he retired, I got a phone call as soon as he saw that and told me, he said, I told you, Scott. I said, dang, Frank, you're a man of your word. And he was.
Wow. Well, I do want to talk about that draft class, but before that, what did you have to do? What was going on behind the scenes with the 49ers medical staff? And then you as well as the guy who, you know, ultimately made that pick of Frank Gore with the, you know, in the top of the third round, what was going on as far as the medical? You know, I know he tore an ACL, his left ACL 1 year, he tore his right ACL the next year, but he also had the shoulder issues. So how could you justify taking a guy who is so banged up at that point in the draft?
Well, at first it was touch and go because when we first got back from the combine, his grade was basically a reject. You know, and
his medical grade,
my career from Ron Wolf,
Scott, his medical grade was a read like, don't even draft.
It was borderline. and they're leaning because of position and that, leaning towards being a reject grade. And Ron Wolf, you know, my one of my first bosses, you know, he says, you have to listen to doctors. You have to listen to them because 9 out of 10 times they're going to be accurate, if depending where you take them. Now, I knew it was going to be close because I knew, you know, both knees, I knew shoulder repair, I knew that. And it was scary because the longevity of him, but his talent was so good that in the third round, I was willing to swing, you know, and see what happens. And like I said, if I knew I could get his, just the fulfillment of 4 years, his first contract, I've been happy with the pick at 3. Now, 2 and 1, of course, you want seconds, possibly third contracts. And the medical is huge coming out. But he was just wired to so right from a standpoint, his mentality and his talent level. Because if he was not banged up, my opinion, he'd have been a first-round running back, you know, coming out. You know, because I saw him on the field when he was a freshman with 2 first-round picks that Miami had. You can tell the difference. Not a difference at all. Matter of fact, you might have said he looked a little better with quickness and explosion in the hole. But, you know, it's tough to go against medicals. You're going to get burned more than you're not. But everything was so right with him that I was willing to swing. And I knew not just the football players coming in, the toughness, the passion. I wanted to start building that culture in the locker room. And I knew no matter what, he'd bring that for sure. And he'd play until they had to drag him off. And we got lucky.
Yeah, you know, just being in that locker room with him and seeing him almost on a daily basis there through, 9 years. That's the thing, that just every year, you know, the passion, the, you know, the desire, just the smarts. Like, I mean, I don't know that I've ever been around a guy who knows football as well as he does. But you didn't know all of that, did you, before you drafted him? Like, in order to take a guy with the medical issues that he had, to take him where you did, you had to be convinced that he just had the mindset, the mentality, and all the off the field stuff that you wanted as far as the passion and the desire. How did you know that he was a special kind of guy?
Because, you know, when I first saw him, I saw him live as a freshman. I was at the game in Miami, and it was a blowout game. And you know, I believe they had McGahee and Portis were in front of him. And you know, first, second, third quarter, they did their things. And fourth quarter, he came in. And, you know, I'm not looking around. Who's this guy? He says, oh, he's a talented guy. He's a freshman. I said, oh, shoot, he looks pretty good, you know. All of a sudden, they give him the rock, and it's like, whoa, he's a true freshman? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, oh, my goodness. Because I remember doing the same thing with Anquan Boldin. His, you know, he came in as a quarterback, they made him receive as a freshman. His first 2 catches, I was at the game, touchdowns. So those two are two unique guys where, first of all, physically and mentally, they fit right in at a young age on, especially Miami, a very good roster, a very talented roster. And you could see he was so passionate with that fourth quarter and those carries that he wanted to prove that he's better and he wanted to play in front of them. You know, same thing he did his first year coming in with Barlow. He said, it ain't even close, Scott. He says, these coaches will figure it out eventually. Same thing they did in Miami. They finally figured it out. But that's just who he is, you know. So – But again, I thought in the third round, hands down, it was worth it. And I know a couple other teams, and I don't know if they're just telling me after the fact, but they said they'd both take him in the third too. Maybe they would have, maybe they wouldn't. But I also know a lot of teams had him rejected, medical reject. And that's fine. You know, that's part of the business. When we nailed it, and we got lucky.
Yeah. I just, you know, looking at that 2005 draft, the thing that stands out to me is now there's a, in the NFL, teams just don't take running backs in the first round. I mean, it has to be an extraordinary situation for a running back to be selected in the first round. But in that draft, after you guys take Alex Smith, number one, it was Ronnie Brown, number two, Cedric Benson, number four, and Cadillac Williams, number five. So 3 running backs taken in the top 5 picks of the draft. And oh, by the way, those 3 running backs combined in their careers did not total Frank Gore's yardage. So what has changed? Like, what do you think, if that 2005 was redrafted with the same information that we have now, or the same information that was being based on back then, those running backs wouldn't go top 5, would they? Or just how's the draft changed from that standpoint?
Yeah, they wouldn't have gone top 5. I'm with you. There's very unique individuals at any position. that people call generational guys. I call them immediate starters, immediate impact players. Doesn't matter if it's a center, safety, running back. You see those guys, and not just the talent, but the background, like Frank, the personality, the toughness, the work ethic, the passion. Then you definitely take those players there. But a lot of teams are going away from it because of the offenses and the fact that, you know, back then it was run to throw. Now it's throw to run, you know, meaning first, second down. Back then you're running the rock. And I knew with the 49er team, because coming from Seattle and playing them, and I knew we were going to struggle up front. And we needed to build up front and build up front. So I know we needed a back that can do it, you know. And it's, back then you'd say he'd have 20, 25 touches a game. Nowadays, if you take it back, you're like, he's almost like a receiver. How many times is he going to be on the field? Is he going to be out there on third and five, third and eight? Are we going no backs and we're going four receiver sets? Back then, of course, that wasn't going on. But in mentioning those three guys, my personal opinion in that draft, Frank was more talented than all three of those guys, all three of them. And if Frank wasn't hurt, Frank would have been put above them on the board. And the only reason Frank was in the third and had a designation of medical is because of that. But the game changes. I wouldn't be surprised in 10 years from now, it's back to the big uglies up front and, you know, 2-3 yards in cloud of dust, you know, because I think when you see these playoff teams, it's nice to see, you know, the one back set and three receivers and the fans see the points and the yards and all that. But you get back in those cold weather games and stuff, you need backs. And I think, you know, honestly, you need two backs and the game changes, as you're well aware, but there's still football players at every position. If they're unique and they're going to bring in starting right away and a game changer right away, you take them, you know. And I don't think people see the touches enough for the backs or the catches out of the backfield enough to have the same impact as they did when Frank was coming out.
Yeah, so there's 2 points of Frank Gore that, I mean, we all know he ranks number 3 all-time NFL rushing list behind Emmitt Smith and Walter Payton. There's 2 elements of Frank's game that I think are underrated. One is the pass catching, because there were years where he was used a lot out of the backfield catching passes, and he finished with almost 500 career receptions. Those numbers catching out of the backfield really dropped when Jim Harbaugh and Greg Roman came in. They just didn't use him in that way. But the other part is pass protection and blitz pickup. I mean, can you speak to, especially the second, because everybody remembers him for the 16,000 yards rushing, but I remember, you know, like a joint practice against the Raiders in Napa, where he's begging to get on the field for one-on-one blitz pickup drills, and he's just destroying guys left and right. And it almost was as if he took more pride in blitz pickup than he did when he had the football in his hands.
Yeah. You know, it's unique to bring that up, because that's one of the things. To his last year he played in the NFL, every offseason he'd call me and say, what can I improve upon? What can I work on? To his last season. And that's just who he is and what he is now. He's wired. But I remember after the first season, I told him, I said, listen, bud, I know you weren't taught technique. I know you weren't taught the importance. And it's not just being physical, but identifying, you know, on third downs. You know, where's the blitz coming from? Or you know, they're going to deke this. They're going to bring that. I said, you have to be an all-around back, you have to improve that no matter what. I said, it's going to be tough from the standpoint you don't want to be real physical in the offseason. You want to save yourself. I said, just start watching tape. You know, go back and watch the Walter Payton. Go back and watch the Herschel Walkers, the guys that were good at it. And just watch your technique. And I said, I'm not worried about your toughness. I'm not worried about your base, your power to do it. I said, but take pride in it, just like you do when running the ball. I said, because that'll separate you from other backs. And he came back after that first year, and like you're talking about, the Napa stuff. I mean, he lived for it, you know. That was just him. And then after that year, you know, he's asking, you know, every season he wanted something to improve upon. And whatever I would say to him or whoever, Brathman, whoever talked to him about it, he'd take pride in that in that offseason to prove that he could come back and show us that he did it and got better at it. And that's what makes him unique. He didn't take time off. I mean, he's always working to get better at something.
So, you know, Frank Gore will be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, no question. You know, the question that I get from a lot of people, will he be first ballot? And I don't know the answer to that. I know he has my vote. But, you know, the one thing about the Pro Football Hall of Fame is only 5 modern era guys can go in every year. That's tops. And already in the class of 2026, you have Frank Gore, Drew Brees, Larry Fitzgerald, Jason Witten and Marquise Pouncey. Those are five guys right there who are probably Hall of Famers, and they will be first time eligible that year. So I don't know if you get caught up in the first ballot or not, but you know, what do you think is kind of the biggest argument, I guess, in addition to the fact that he's, you know, 16,000 yards and number three all time? What do you think the biggest argument for Frank Gore just not waiting and being a first ballot guy is?
Well, of course, I'm biased, you know, because I love Frank. And I personally, I think he deserves it. I've been lucky enough over my years of being in the NFL to be around first ballot Hall of Famers and really legit, you know, the Brett Favres, Reggie White, guys like that. I mean, hands down, first ballot guys. Frank fits right in that category of being around him, not just as a football player, but as a person and what he's done for the game. I look at it as the impact the team in a good manner, of course, which they do, but they impact the position overall for the NFL. And I think once he became a starter and once people realized who he was and what he was, people started watching him. We're talking about guys that are in the Hall of Fame now, not just running backs, but offensive players saying, well, why is he keeping better? And everybody says he can't do it, but yet he does it. And he does it and does it and does it. And I think him bringing that makes him unique. And the guys you mentioned, they're all worthy. There's no doubt about it. And there's people that aren't in yet that are worthy of it and have been on and have been eligible to go in. You know, if he doesn't go in first ballot, I think he'll be very disappointed. I will not be, because I know he'll get in and he deserves to get in. And I think people look at him that understand football as a first ballot in their mind. And that's what he has to get in his mind if he's not the first ballot, because people see him as that know football and know him.
Yeah, I agree. He will be in. I hope he's first ballot, but sure. You just never know. Hey, Scott, can you stick around a little bit? I want to talk about the current 49ers after this word from our sponsor.
Yes, I will.
Win a Ford F-150 at Drayton Resort and Casino. One truck winner and $50,000 in cash each Friday. Drawings on the last Friday of the month. Win a new truck with Drayton Resort and Casino's big Ford truck giveaway.
All right, we're back on 49ers Talk with Scott McLuhan, former 49ers general manager. And we talked a lot about Frank Gore and just what a memorable player he is, one of the all-time most popular 49ers, of course. And Scott, tell me a little bit about what you're doing now. I know you're still doing a lot of scouting, so you're up to date on the draft every year. Tell me what you got going on.
You know, I have my own business. It's called Instinctive Scouting. I've been doing it since I left at the time as the Washington Redskins. Now it's Commanders, but I enjoy it. You know, it's not travel involved. I work for some GMs and teams that are friends of mine that I started in the business with, similar age, came up from the bottom the way up. So I try to help them, and they do a nice job keeping me busy with players each year, mainly college guys. I work for a couple agents, bigger agents that I respect, and try to help them to point them in the right direction, you know, for players coming up in the draft. So, you know, I do, like last year, I probably wrote over 250 reports. And it's not every top player. It's the teams will send me 100 names to 150 names. And sometimes they overmatch, sometimes they don't. Sometimes it's unique because I could tell exactly what they want to do in the draft, you know, because one team sends me 12 tight ends. I'm like, okay, well, they're going to draft one or two tight ends, you know, but it's fun because most of the guys I see are good players. And then the agents will bring guys like, you know, they don't want top guys. They want fifth through seventh. With the lower maintenance, lower cost to train them and that kind of stuff. So it's great. Like I said, the main thing is I get to help people out that I respect and are friends of mine. And I like having the ability to do that.
Well, I would like to ask you about some of the guys the 49ers drafted. I'm assuming you can speak to these players.
I will definitely speak to the ones that I did for other teams. I did a full report on me, and I watched 2020 tape, 2021 tape, and have a pretty good feel for what they can and can't do. Now, I don't deal with any medical or background when I evaluate it for the teams. It's just pure talent where I see him playing and all that.
Okay, well, let's start off with Drake Jackson, the defensive end edge rusher from USC. 49ers take him in the second round. What are they getting with Drake Jackson?
You know what? He, very unique guy, because in my personal opinion, there's there's some unanswered questions. Because if you watch them off of 2021 tape, you think strictly as a 3-4 outside linebacker / DPR, designated pass rusher. You know, but very young guy, and he comes to the combine, he's 20 plus pounds heavier. So are you like, okay, is that good? Meaning he can still move the same with this added weight, or is he going to lose? Cause he has a great initial first step and he's got some legit NFL pass rush ability. That's an athlete with flexibility and all that stuff. But if with adding the weight, it could be a good thing. Meaning then you got the versatility of maybe playing him some of five, possibly some of three technique, because he's a long arm sucker. Like I said, he's young. I mean, he might keep, you know, weight wise. The important thing this year is see how he carries it. Can he play 20, 25 pounds heavier, move inside a little bit on certain schemes, or does he need to go back down to what he was this past season at SC and just be considered, you know, a wiry, young, designated pass rusher slash outside linebacker? Because the best thing he does is go forward. And as you're well aware, with the NFL, pass rushers are unique and hard to find. And the unanswered questions are positives but could be negatives. But I give the fact that he's young. But it was interesting. He showed up at the combine. He's a different guy. You're like, that can't be him. There's no way that's him. They're like, yeah, he's young. He's growing. The agents, you know, had him eating, feeding him right. So it'll be interesting how he goes this training camp, how his weight is, and if it fluctuates. But a lot of upside. I guess definitely a first-round pick potential-wise.
Yeah. So last year, the 49ers took Trey Sermon in the third round, running back from Ohio State. They also have Elijah Mitchell, Jeff Wilson. And then this year, they take another running back in the third round. This is Ty Davis Price from LSU. Any thoughts on how he transitions as a kind of a bigger back into the NFL?
I did not do a full report on him, but I know him because I watched those teams, you know, especially the bigger teams, offense, defense. I like the fact, like you said, a bigger body guy, a kind of a no-nonsense guy. Again, not a lot of production over career, not a lot of touches over career, which is, in my opinion, is a good thing, you know, because back in the day, those guys would get too many touches. They come in, and you hope you get them three because they're so banged up. But I like the fact that he was no-nonsense between the tackles, downhill guy. It was a tough guy.
Mm-hmm. Danny Gray, the speedy receiver from SMU, did you get a chance to watch him?
You know, I did. Not fully, but I know him from the standpoint. He, nice size, excellent play speed, really good production this last year. You know, I think he needs to grow physically, strength-wise, and maybe toughness-wise so he can play bigger against the corners in the NFL. But that's all part of the process. But a very interesting pick because if you hit, you got a big play guy.
Mm-hmm. Do you know much about Spencer Burford? He played tackle at Texas San Antonio, and then also Nick Zakel, another tackle at Fordham. And the 49ers envision both of those guys sliding inside to guard, and maybe even Zakel from Fordham, potentially a future at center. Do you know anything about those two?
Of the three, I know they took another one. Burford, just so you know, every NFL team that hired me this past year and every agent I worked for all had me do reports on him. So he was on the radar. So I know him. A small school guy from San Antonio, played right there, but talented, does some unique things. I personally think he could be a tackle. I think in 2-3 years, he just needs to play and understand the importance of each play. Because he got away with things, you know, at UTSA that he's not going to get away with, you know, in camp and in the NFL. Because he has good feet. He has flexibility. He has length. You know, so it'll be interesting. I liked him. I gave him a solid grade, knowing that you're not going to see it right away, but you might have something 2-3 years in there if the interviews were good and he understands football and he understands the toughness part of the offensive line, because the natural physical skills are there for sure.
And there's two corners, Sam Womack, and they envision him as a nickelback. Potentially a guy who could compete to take over for Kaywan Williams, and then a true cornerback, Tariq Castro Fields from Penn State. Any thoughts on those two, Womack and Castro Fields?
I think their best bang for the buck was getting Castro Fields. I think he's a bigger version of Shante Spencer. I think he's going to play, and he's going to play well. Now, he played a lot of football at Penn State, and I did him 2 years in a row. He just wouldn't come out. He kept going back for another year. But a very intelligent player. Nice size. He's probably going to end up being more like a cover two zone type guy, which is fine. I know he ran better than I thought he would at the combine, but when it's all said and done, he's a pretty good football player. And I'm not so sure if you need that he can't be a backup safety early, you know, because he has a size for it. And he'll tackle when it's when he needs to, but there's some good receivers that came out of the Big Ten the last couple of years, and he's a 50-50 guy. I mean, he competes with them. He doesn't back down from it. I thought that where they got him, I think that's a steal. I think that's the best pick they had in the draft just because where they got him.
Wow. Hey, now that we're a year removed, but you know, a year ago, obviously we were talking about Trey Lance, and this year we're still talking about Trey Lance because we didn't see much of him as a rookie. Do you have any thoughts on where the 49ers selected him at number three over the guys they selected him, and they kept Jimmy Garoppolo around for one season, and now, you know, they're in this kind of no man's land of wanting to trade Garoppolo, but no team's going to trade for a quarterback who can't throw. It's a non-guaranteed contract. So if you want to trade him, but if you don't trade him, you can't trade him. Do you hold on to him and that money when that money could be going to other players like Deebo Samuel and Nick Bosa down the road? Do you have any thoughts? And it certainly sounds like the 49ers are moving on, you know, to Trey Lance. Do you have any thoughts about that quarterback situation and the potential of Trey Lance?
You know what? I do personally, but I can't really answer that question from the standpoint, like you said, he hasn't played enough. I really liked his upside coming out. Apparently they did. And with Kyle, they have a really good quarterback coach, you know, so they saw enough to do that. Now, will he be the guy? Who knows? That's something you have to see in practice every day, in the meeting rooms every day, and see from last year at this juncture to this year at this juncture, how is he growing, you know, mentally, physically, techniques, mechanics, all that stuff. So they know. But also, me personally as a GM, I'd much rather have a guy and paying him money and knowing that, listen, Trey might be the guy taking over game five or six, but, you know, if JJ's shoulder's good, which I'm sure is going to be, Jimmy's shoulder going to be good, that you want to win games. You want to win games early in the season. You have to. And if you go into the first week or go through training camp and you say, this is our best option to win the first four games, six games, and then hopefully Trey can slide in then, you keep both of them. Because I'd much rather pay that guy and it's guaranteed or whatever for the year then worry about paying, you know, a backup guard, a backup corner, a backup pass rusher, which are all important, but not as important as a quarterback, you know. And now with 17 games, and it's going to be 18 before we know it, you need two quarterbacks, you know. And there's no rush from the outside looking in to get Trey in there, but there's rush to win games. And, you know, if Jimmy's going to give you the best chance, my first one to win games, he's your guy. You know, and the players believe it, and the locker room believes it, and it's going good in training camp, and the shoulders bounce back, and he's throwing the ball, or maybe he's throwing the ball better than he rolled. But, you know, the thing with Trey, he's got a lot of football left in his life, a lot of football left. And, you know, we won't know about the trading up or the pick or what he is until he gets out there. And when we get 2, 3, 4 years into it, and then, you know, I'm pulling for the guy. I think the guy's super talented. I think the guy sounds like a great person, a great teammate, doing everything right. And, you know, a lot of media's on him, and it's not his fault. You know, they're saying he can, they're saying he can't. No one knows except the people in that building that see him every day, you know. So I can't answer it even close. But like I said, it's good to have two quarterbacks and know that you got one young one that's going to be a superstar in your opinion, but you got one that's already an Alex Smith, meaning he's Mr. Dependable. You know exactly what play you're going to call. You know exactly what you're going to get out of him every week. Yeah. And that's a good feeling as a fan and as a coach.
You know, Scott, I guess we're so in tune to the 49ers and maybe we don't have that global view of what's going on around the NFL, but through your eyes, where are the 49ers as far as just the talent on their roster? Do you consider them, you know, a top 10 talent team, top five? Like, I don't even know if you would do that, but where do you think they are? Is this team ready to...
I think it's ready now to definitely be a contender. I saw him play live last year. I went out to Patrick's, you know, the Ring of Honor induction. So I stayed for the game, and you know, I follow him still, of course. And if healthy, they're a good football team, and they can play with anybody. Now the key thing is going to be, is that anybody meeting with Jimmy? Or are we going to roll the dice and is it possibly with Trey when we don't know for sure if it's going to be with Trey until the bullets start flying week in and week out? That's a dilemma that you have. But again, if you're around these guys every day, you know those answers 80% in your own mind, you know, who's making the decisions on it, you know, but it's nice to know what you have in Jimmy and know that your team can win now instead of saying with Trey, it'd be like when I first got there, it'd be like, okay, we got Alex. We're going to start from really ground zero and try to build inside out as much as possible and get this thing right. Culture wise, you know, environmental locker room wise, they're already there. And they have Pro Bowl players. They have all pro players, you know, and that's a good thing to have. But the guy calling the shots in the huddle, the guy coming to the line of scrimmage, making the players on third and eight believe in him, he's the guy to get it done, or they're like crossing their fingers and the coach is crossing their fingers. Like, hopefully he sees this. They're going to show this. Hopefully he sees that. I think with Jimmy, you get that feeling. With Trey, not yet, just because you haven't seen it enough. You know, practice is practice, and that's great. But when the game get rolling and those fourth quarters come along, that's when the quarterbacks separate themselves. And it's always nice to have a signal caller that the 10 guys in the huddle believe what he's calling. No, there's a chance we're going to get this. You know, whereas like, well, shoot, we might, hell, it might be a touchdown. Hell, we might be a loss, might be an interception, might be a fumble, you know. So, but I think they're a good football team. I think they're coached very well. Like I said, when I was out there, they were banged up a little bit. And it seems to happen each year, but that's the business and that's the profession. You know, if they stay healthy, though, but, I mean, they proved it. Even last year, they can play with anybody. And that's all you ask for. And you get to the right – in the playoffs, you know, the first year I was in Green Bay, we won the Super Bowl. Every starter that started on offense and defense week one started in the Super Bowl. That's just pure luck. Yeah. I mean, think about that. I mean, pure luck. And we won the Super Bowl, you know, because that happened. And, you know, if they stay healthy, they're definitely contenders. Definitely.
Yeah. Well, Scott, I appreciate you joining us on 49ers Talk. And, you know, I reached out to you when Frank Gore announced his retirement, something that we thought would never happen. They'd have to cut that jersey off of him. I mean, he's got, I think you've said this before, but where does he rank among your favorite draft picks ever?
Well, just because he won't leave me alone, call me all the time. He's probably number one, because if I didn't say that, he'd get really, really mad at me. Now he's boxing, I don't need him coming after me with his uppercuts. So, but you know what? And again, the football player is a football player, but as a person. We have a friendship, like I told you, and he's not, and I probably should say it, but I see him as like a son to me. Because, you know, he's been through a lot in his life, and he's still going through stuff in his life. And he's just, you know, like you said, people – first meet him, or, you know, even when they had the Wonderlic score coming out, they're like, well, is he smart enough? I'm like, guys, wait till you talk to him. Go let him play a game. He'll tell you on third and six with 4:15 in the third quarter what the middle linebacker did, what the Sam did, what the Will did, and why he set up the safety on the first cut, knowing he's 5 yards back on the second cut. It's just, he's such an intelligent guy. But I have to say, number one, I've been around some really, really good football players and drafted some really good people. He, as a package, is excellent, you know. I mean, and well-deserving everything he's getting. And, you know, there's not a lot of people out there wired like him and what he's been through, you know, not just medically, but other stuff. And the guys, you know, that's why the Hall of Fame stuff so important in my mind, because it identifies not just the player, but the person and what he does for the position, what he did for the game, really, especially with the 49ers. I mean, I know when we talked about there, they got the Super Bowl, you know, but he's a big part of that. And, you know, when my first years there with him, those guys, it was tough, you know, but none of those guys backed away, you know, none of those guys turned and ran. They accepted it and kept getting better and better. And Frank's a big part of that.
You know? Yeah. And I mean, man, your drafts, you know, Patrick Willis, Hall of Fame finalist, you know, Joe Staley. I mean, You brought some talent to the 49ers and some old-timers.
It was a good group of scouts. I mean, and I think we're all on the same page, and the coaches were good too, and understand and listen. It's nice to hit the home run and get the fans excited about, you know, the Kuiper, McShay pick and all that. I said, guys, the football player, we'll identify that. And we'll identify the scheme and where he fits, but what we need to identify, the most important, is what's inside these cats. Because I've been lucky enough to be around a lot of good players and high draft picks who weren't good players. And there's one usually riding line that makes them different. Either they can or can't, is what's inside them. Is the passion, is competitiveness, is the team and not the me, you know? And a lot of those guys we brought in were all about team. And I think that kept us going through the tough times. I think eventually got that whole group to a Super Bowl, which they deserved, you know? And it's, But I had a lot of good people around me, and the ownership was great. And I'm telling you, when we were rolling and you saw what came out of it, you know, a lot of these players I still talk to, I brought some of the other teams with me, you know, and they just good guys. And the reason I brought them wasn't so much that they were still really talented, you know, but what they've been through and how they're wired and how the intelligence, toughness, passion, and good guys, just good community guys, not out there getting in trouble, you know, which nowadays it's such a big thing. But those guys never did that, you know, and they kept fighting, and Frank was a big part of it. But you're right, Staley Willis, I'm all those guys. Look at Al Smith, what he did and what he went through. And I mean, you got to remember this offense is the guys starting on five. We had five offense coordinators the first 5 years. You know, I mean, so you're learning new schemes, and you got a new voice telling you certain things. And that's not easy for anybody, especially quarterback, but like running backs and that stuff, because it's different philosophies. You know, so those guys even had to overcome that, you know, and they did. They stayed in there and kept going. And it was a good group. It's a fun group. I know that. I'm going back out there. I'll be out there for Frank's thing. I'll see a lot of those guys again. But it's funny, I was sitting there with Patrick's life. It was me, Alex, Joe, and Patrick just sitting there talking. I'm like, wow, you know, these guys, you know, because they're all first rounders, you know. I'm thinking to myself, if Frank was here, I'd tell him, you know, that's my best pick. But, you know, I wouldn't have done it. But still, it's just cool to see those guys and talk to them and see they're still successful in life, even without football, you know. And that's what you kind of guys you want to bring in your building. And it worked out well for us. And we got lucky with some of them. There's no doubt about it. Frank was lucky. I mean, if I was such a good GM, why didn't I take him in the first? You know, not say, well, I knew I could get him in the third. I didn't know that. But just the medical. But still, great group, you know. Ownership down. Yeah, I still pull for him. I mean, it's the fans deserve it, and they got a good product, and they're doing a good job there.
All right. Well, Scott, hey, I appreciate your time, and I'm sure I'll see you out here at Levi Stadium when Frank Gore is inducted into the 49ers Hall of Fame. I look forward to seeing you.
All right, man. Thank you for your time, buddy. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, I took a lot of Scott McLuhan's time. I hope you remained awake during that, Jennifer. You were able to listen to what Scott had to say, but probably the most interesting thing was what he said about how he would think about the quarterback position. And he said, there's no rush for Trey Lance to play because Trey Lance is 22 years old and he's under contract for a couple more years. But he goes, there is a rush to win football games. And ultimately, the 49ers have to decide which quarterback gives them the best chance of winning football games at the beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. And hearing that, I understand it. I think that, yes, that's probably a good approach. But my belief is, in everything the 49ers have been saying, is that they believe that when the season starts, it's going to be Trey Lance who gives them the best chance of winning football games.
I think so too. I mean, all signs point to that. And I just don't think that Jimmy Garoppolo wants to return to the 49ers. Now, who knows? It may happen, but would you really, I mean, just the sense that we got after talking to him, saying goodbye to the media, to the fans, I just don't think he is going to turn the page backwards and go back to 49ers, backup or not. I think it's Trey Lance's turn to be the leader of the team. He's already stepped into the role very quickly. And you can see it, his poise and presence on the field. You look at the supporting cast around him, I think they're set up for success. So I think the best shot they have is for Trey Lance to be under center.
Yeah, listen to this question. This comes from Talk to Bloom. I think Jimmy G is a realist. If he's going to wind up starting the season as a backup, shouldn't he prefer to do it with the 49ers where he knows the system and can work at a high level if called upon, even if it means taking a pay cut? It's a great question. And I would think that would be what the 49ers would pitch to him if they decide that, okay, Trey Lance is a starter. Gosh, you know, we would love to keep Jimmy at, let's say, $7 million a year and $8 million or whatever the case may be. And now it's up to them to convince Garoppolo that the 49ers remain the best place for him. But like you said, you just get the sense that, you know, I think Jimmy, wasn't Jimmy's final words to us basically, it's been quite a ride or something along those lines. And it clearly he had already come to the, oh, I was going to say realization, but it hasn't mm-hmm. been realized yet. But he came to a pretty, I mean, he came to the understanding within himself that this was it. He's right. done with the 49ers right. and he's going to be moving on. And then of course the shoulder surgery, no team trade for him. And now he's still kind of twisting in the wind.
Well, and there's that one, the interviews that he said, you know, he would wish that on his worst enemy, his worst friend. So I don't think he wants to go through it again. I mean, he's played well enough. He's respected enough in the league, great guy in the locker room. If you know what's going to happen, where a quarterback on another team is going to get injured and they're going to need somebody. Now I know Baker Mayfield's out there as well, and not yet, but you know, he's on the team and the Cleveland Browns have another quarterback on their roster. So, you know, both of those guys are potential quarterbacks other places where if there's an injury or if there's some sort of happening where the quarterback can't play, they're ready to step in. And those guys are pretty much plug and play players, right? So they yeah. know the NFL, they know the system. They're, I mean, you look at what Jimmy Garoppolo did when he first came to the Niners, quickly took over, spent weeks, the you know, in Rich Scangarello's office, got down the playbook, the parts that he could do, and they put him on the field and he was very successful. So I don't see that being a problem with him being successful with another team quickly.
Yeah. I my thought would be, and the 49ers certainly wouldn't want to hear this, but if I were a team looking for a quarterback, I would be more apt to make a trade for Baker Mayfield than I would for Garoppolo, because Garoppolo, I don't see why a team would trade for Garoppolo, because his contract's $25 million and it's not guaranteed. And so at some point you'd be playing this game of chicken with the 49ers of like, well, why would we trade for him? Because we don't think you're going to keep him at $25 million when mm-hmm. you're sending the, you know, the smoke signal to everybody that Trey Lance is going to be the starter. And I wouldn't think that the 49ers, well, let's go to this question here. Maybe this question kind of, this comes from Game Agent ET. Interested teams want the Browns to eat some of Baker Mayfield's guaranteed salary for this year to facilitate a trade. Because Jimmy's contract isn't guaranteed, could the 49ers just trade him as is and have the other team negotiate a new salary with Jimmy without eating the cap? Well, yes, but you wouldn't trade, there would be no reason for a team to trade him or trade for Garoppolo, because if you're not going to pay him that $25 million, if you're Garoppolo and a team just traded for you, why would you then say, oh, I'm going to take less money, because you don't have to.
Right. He's in control of the situation.
He's in complete control of the situation. And with the Browns, the Browns are in a position where absolutely, if it meant having to pay or having to eat some of Baker Mayfield's salary, 100% they would, or they mm-hmm. should, because that's guaranteed money, $18 million guaranteed. So even if they trade Baker Mayfield and they have to pay all but $2 million of that, they're still saving $2 million and they're getting a draft pick they wouldn't have gotten mm-hmm. with the 49ers. Or another team, you know, with the 49ers, why would the 49ers pay a percentage of Garoppolo's salary when they would say, you know, that was not guaranteed anyway, take the full $25 million in savings that you can redistribute throughout your roster, mm-hmm. unless the team says, if you pay $12 million of it, we'll give you a second round pick. You know, that would be the only way.
Yeah,
they would do it. So I still think the most likely scenario is that the 49ers have a very difficult time finding a trade partner, and then it gets into training camp and Trey Lance shows enough where they're thinking, well, we can't keep a backup quarterback making $25 million. So let's just save the $25 million and allow Jimmy Garoppolo to be a free agent, in essence, work out his own contract. And it very well might be, as one listener suggested, that he sees all the options out there and ultimately decides, you know what, maybe the 49ers are my best option to come back. It wouldn't be his first choice.
Nope.
No question. But it very well might be that that's
where one of the only choices. Yeah, it could be one of the only choices.
Yeah, and so that's still it's going to be fascinating because it's getting to that point now where Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be cleared very mm-hmm. soon to play football. And that's a big time for the 49ers to then, I'm sure they've kept in contact with some of these teams. I'm sure they've kept in contact with Carolina and mm-hmm. just said, you know, hey, he's expected to be cleared around this time. Mm-hmm. What's the situation? But it's nowhere near as simple as everybody thought it would be when the season ended. And, you know, I thought, and I'm sure everybody around the league thought that Garoppolo would be on a new team at the start of the new league year in mid-March, and that hasn't happened. And there's really no indication right now where he's going to end up. But I guess because he's still with the 49ers, mm-hmm. if you're a betting person, that's probably still the odds on favorite because he's on the 49ers right now. Right. And something will have to happen for him not to be on the 49ers. And when that happens, if that happens, how it happens, all that is a big old TBA.
It really is. Do you recall another situation like this where you don't know where a quarterback would be going?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Okay. It was Colin Kaepernick.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. It was Colin Kaepernick when that off season, when he was oh so close mm-hmm. to be traded to the Broncos mm-hmm. and every side kind of blamed the other side. The Broncos wanted Kaepernick to take a pay cut and that money was guaranteed. They wanted him uh-huh. to take a pay cut, or they also wanted the 49ers to pick up some of the financial burden. And so the Broncos were kind of upset with Kaepernick for not taking the pay cut. They were also upset with the 49ers for not getting the deal done. 49ers were upset with the Broncos for not paying the full salary. They were upset at Kaepernick for not taking the lesser salary with the Broncos.
There's a lot of upset people there.
And Kaepernick was like upset with or had reason to be upset with the Broncos for not wanting to pay the full amount and upset with the 49ers for not kicking in some money. So there was just a lot of blame all the way around. But I remember, you know, very much like this offseason. I mean, I was ready. Yeah, I was ready to any point for something to happen with Kaepernick. And that would have been leading into the 2016 season mm-hmm. and nothing ever happened. And he ended up, you know, starting about half the season, I think, mm-hmm. with the team, right? Mm-hmm. That year, his final year with the 49ers. So, yeah, that would be the closest thing. And also, the other parallel is it's very similar because Kaepernick had, you know, was coming off the surgery, as is right. Garoppolo. So there were similar things going on, both physically, financially, and everything else. So that would be the closest thing that I can come to as far as a comparison to what's going on with the 49ers and Jimmy Garoppolo this offseason.
There's so many unknowns at this point, where Garoppolo will play, what he wants to do. It doesn't sound like he has spoken to anyone with the club, and they're really just, you know, I guess it's kind of a wait and see thing. So we will wait and see, and we'll wait and see till the next 49ers Talk episode.
Thanks for listening to 49ers Talk with Matt Maiocco. Please rate, review, and subscribe for free on your podcast provider.